Hello, welcome to the third of four recordings from Next Century Cities and the Institute for Local Self-Reliance on financing for next generation broadband. These recordings were made during a special session hosted by Next Century Cities at Broadband Communities Magazine's conference, Fiber for the New Economy, on September 18th in Lexington, Kentucky. In this recording, panelists explore options to financing broadband projects. Moderator Scott Shapiro, Senior Advisor to the Mayor of Lexington, Kentucky, leads a lively discussion on models and approaches different communities can take to finance their broadband networks, with a particular focus on the public-private partnership model. Panelists include Lev Gonick, the CEO of One Community, Nicholas Hahn, Senior Managing Director at Macquarie Capital, Joel Mulder, Vice President of Sales for X2 Technology, Joanne Hovis, the president of CTC Technology and Energy, and Tom Kovrick, managing director for public finance at KeyBank Capital Markets. Thank you for listening.
I'm going to turn it over to Scott Shapiro.
Hi, I'm Scott Shapiro. I'm a senior advisor to the mayor here in Lexington, Kentucky, and about a year and a half ago, we started thinking about fiber. So late to the game for some folks, maybe earlier than other folks. And the first call we made was, I think probably a lot of folks' first calls was to Chattanooga. We wanted to learn about what they were doing there. Second call I made was to the FCC. I wanted to get their thoughts and maybe some recommendations, and they pointed me to a gentleman in Ammon, Idaho, who runs a small network, but maybe is a bit of a rock star in this community, an open access network that they built there. So the network that I started to plug into was fantastic. It turns out there's lots of people all around the country that are really trying to figure this out and trying to figure out the financing around it. So I was able to meet Deb Socha, so to meet Joanne Hovis, Lev, Blair Levin, Susan Crawford, people who are thinking about fiber, thinking about financing. And it turned out that I've been keeping sort of a mental list of the kinds of models that we've run across that are out there. So of course there's the Google Fiber model, which we're all familiar with. The Chattanooga model, if you're a city that's lucky enough to own its own utility. There's the Chattanooga model. There's the massive federal subsidy model, right? There's the bonding. So there are small cities in Kentucky that some even 20 years ago, like Glasgow, Kentucky, have bonded to build a fiber network. There's the slow growth model, right, in places like Santa Monica, where they started small and used the profits to sort of reinvest and build out the network. And there's the open access network that is developing, potentially with an anchor tenant. So I'm sure I've missed some models, but that's a lot of them. And I think that speaks to the creativity in this space right now, which is why we're all here. We're all trying to answer that question, including the folks on this panel. I should say that there is a model called the incumbent just invest model, but we haven't seen that one yet in the wild. So what's a city to do? So you've heard a little bit about Lexington and our journey. We, the mayor a year ago, said he wanted to make sure that Lexington was a gigabit city. As he said at the lunch, we're a university city. So Lexington, 300,000 people around a major public research university. And there's, when you have that kind of city, where more than 10% of the population are students, you get a lot of startup activity, a lot of entrepreneurship, a lot of IP, a lot of ideas, a lot of arts and culture, a lot of demand for the internet. It was a surprise to many people in Lexington. We were the number one Roku market. We buy more e-books per capita. than any other city. So all these are sort of indicators of the usage here. So we're busy trying to figure out how we build fiber, how we get a gigabit network here in Lexington. Disclosure, we're working with Joanne Hovis, who is a member of the panel here. But we're lucky enough to have this tremendous panel of folks who can talk to us about these financing options. So what I'll do is I'll go down with just a brief introduction of who they are, and then we're going to ask them to more specifically or in a deeper way introduce themselves and talk a little bit about, ask each of them to talk a little bit about what we all should be thinking about in relation to financing. So we have Tom Kovarik. He is Managing Director of Public Finance for KeyBank Capital Markets. We have Joel Mulder, who is the Vice President of Sales for X Squared Technology, which is does network design, building, and potentially financing as well. We have Joanne Hovis, who is the President of CTC Technology and Energy, who is probably one of the top, if not the top, sort of consultant helping cities figure out how to get fiber networks built. We have Lev Gonick, who is the CEO of One Community, which is operates a fiber network in Cleveland. And at the end, we have Nick Hamm, who is Senior Managing Director of Macquarie Capital, who we've all heard is deeply involved in Kentucky's Middle Mile project. So I'd love to first turn it over to you, if you could introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your thoughts on financing.
Good afternoon, and thank you. I have the unique task of going first, which means I get to set the theme for our afternoon session. My name is Tom Kovarik. As Scott mentioned, I'm a managing director with KeyBank Capital Markets. In my capacity as managing director in the public finance group, I direct the initiatives related to debt issuance. So I know many of you think debt is a four-letter word, which in fact it is, but in some instances it's not a bad four-letter word. So in this capacity, I have served as lead banker for transactions related to the Utopia Network in Utah, which many of you are aware of, with the sister agency UIA, the Utah Infrastructure Agency. We've worked with MyNet, which is the consortium in Oregon, just outside Salem. There are two communities, Portland and Independence, Oregon. I'm sorry, Salem, Monmouth and Independence, Oregon, that comprise the MyNet network. And then we're presently working with a series of other issuers. In recent transactions, I've worked actually with Crawfordsville, Indiana as well. So I think, you know, in trying to figure out how to theme this, I would just say that in conversations with my esteemed panelists last week, as well as with many of you over the last couple of days, I think each plan of finance that you look at will be distinct and unique, as each project is distinct and unique. And so when you look at the many factors that impact a project in and of itself, when you're dealing with municipal governments and when you're dealing with governmental entities, obviously, whether they're school districts or otherwise, you're dealing with a whole host of other demographic, political, fiscal, and other outside influences that will definitely impact the ultimate structure of your transaction. And so from my perspective, that's what I would like to do, is just theme the panel in that each transaction will be dictated by the unique characteristics of each project itself. And so I think I'd like to open it up and let everybody else introduce themselves, and I can certainly talk about debt in some more detail as we get into the conversation.
Good enough. I'm Joel Mulder. I'm Vice President of Sales for EX Squared. I'm a bit different on this panel in that I'm a contractor. So we're a design, build, maintain contractor. Couple of the projects to show where we come from, the EPB project, we did over 35,000 installs, taking the fiber off the backbone and running it up to the house, bringing the DVR, putting up the ONT, and hooking everything up. So that's our background on there. And, of course, that was a very uniquely financed system. We also built that little network called the Iowa Communications Network, and I was personally involved with that one, where we ran fiber to 99 counties, a node in each county. That was financed with general obligation bonds. the problem Iowa had is those good old incumbents figured out a way to get to the legislature and did not allow Iowa to do anything but serve governmental entities with it. So no wonder they're still, but it's still up and operational. And you talk about, I know from the last session, how long does fiber last? Fiber's still up and operational. Those electronics changed, but that fiber's up there and going. And that was built, I think we finished it probably in the 1992-93 area. So again, as a contractor, I instead of looking at a financing model and a cost model or a contractor model, I looked at the costs first. So our first goal in life is to take a look at what it would cost to build the network and then fit the financing to what that cost of the network was. So that puts it in a little different spin. And really, the company that I work for right now is not into the middle miles for a financing model, but we are very interested in the last mile. And we think there's an aggregation model. We think there's an anchor tenant model, which Nick is also in with. And being able to come to the cities, for example, off the middle mile network that Kentucky is building, and be able to offer some opportunities for you folks to build out in various ways. And there's models that are out there that can do that. I think we would all agree up here that the number one thing, and I say this over and over again, the solution might change, but you all need a champion. You need somebody within that community that's going to stand up and say, damn it, we're going to get this done, we're going to figure it out. And to have that person out there that is guiding that to bring those stakeholders together and build, you know, break up the silos that are in every community that's out there. So, Brian?
Well, really happy to be here. Thank you, Next Century Cities, and thank you, Scott. Just sort of a quick summary from my standpoint of the trends that I'm seeing out there from a financing standpoint. Assuming that you are a municipality or county or other kind of locality or municipal electric that's seeking to finance a network, the traditional way of doing this in the early years of municipal HFC... Not hearing me so well? Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you. The traditional way of financing, I think quite obviously, in the early years of municipalities or local governments building hybrid fiber coax or fiber to the home networks was to use revenue bonds. And that was a very common model, and there was a market for those revenue bonds. And the revenues that the bonds were secured by were the projected revenues that were going to be coming from the communications enterprise that was being built. That opportunity has largely disappeared, and I think there's not a broad understanding of that necessarily among many of the localities and municipal electrics who are thinking about projects, but markets really are not willing to bond anymore based on the revenues of an enterprise that is just being set up. And generally what we're hearing is that they will require 3 years of established revenues at a minimum in order to look at revenue bonds. So what we're seeing more of, obviously, is general obligation bonding. One thought on revenue bonds, though, which is that it does not, if you want revenue bonds, one of the patterns we see is that one does not have to secure those bonds with communications revenues that the markets won't accept. You can secure them with other revenues so long as they're established. So in the case of an electric utilities, in the case of a municipality that has water revenues or sales tax revenues or other kinds of very established revenue streams, that's an option. And you should all know that that's out there and that that's something that is very much marketable and favored. Not palatable to all communities, but that's one of the things that you should think about as you think about your menu of choices. And then that brings us to general obligation bonds, which are easiest to secure, will have the best terms, but of course are backed by the full faith and credit of the locality and make them higher risk. And this is relatively uncomfortable for many communities. We have seen lots of networks that are financed through general obligation bonds. And if the business plan is sound, if the approach is conservative, if it's not highly speculative, you should be in pretty good shape for this kind of a thing. I do think that geobonding for communications projects is really tough these days, and another trend I'm seeing a lot of in cities and towns and counties around the country is communities saying, we're not sure that we have the bonding capacity that we want. We have to preserve a significant piece of it to deal with probably pension obligations first and foremost, but also other kinds of issues that are coming due, maybe not quite as urgent as some of these looming pension problems. And that means that there are communities who are otherwise really well placed to do communications networks and want to do them, but they're very cautious about geobonding because of the need to maintain significant headroom in terms of bonding authority. So those are some of the patterns we're seeing out there and some of the options that we're seeing, and I'll stop there.
Lev, before you go, if anyone has any questions they'd like to start writing down on those index cards, this is Kay here who can either give you cards or collect them from you. Thanks. Okay, Lev.
Hi, Lev Gonick from One Community in Cleveland. I want to suggest to you a slight reframing. Today, in these last two sessions, we've heard you have choices of which of the various approaches you want to take with respect to middle and last mile activity. I want to slightly reframe that to say, depending on the maturity or where you are in the maturity curve of the activity, you will probably want to consider multiple different strategies in a portfolio approach to thinking about your network strategy. One Community is a 12-year-old nonprofit focused in on growing the digital economy and quality of life of Northeast Ohio. Not quite the same mission as a lot of you are obviously concerned with per se, and yet I think if you pull back just one or abstract one layer, actually that's what you're all concerned with. And obviously we all believe that digital infrastructure is a huge part of growing the digital economy, in fact, arguably the prerequisite. But I want to suggest to you briefly from our own experience over 12 years that there are at least seven portfolio elements to thinking about. Rather than the silver bullet, all I've got to do is pay really good consultants to find me the one path and nirvana is right around the corner. I want to suggest to you that there are at least seven different ways to be thinking about funding middle mile and last mile activities based on our experience. The first of is if you haven't really started on this journey, and yet you've got some, again, passion, commitment, vision, evangelical interest in this space, the first piece of it, I would say, is actually looking to donations. That's what we started with. It's pilot work. It's actually the proof of concept. Very low risk at one level, but got to find some folks who are prepared to engage. Certainly our experience. Secondly, if the pilot looks promising, the next phase I would say is philanthropy in your community, tied to the public benefit proposition that should inform why it is you're trying to grow the digital economy and the quality of life in your community, to engage philanthropy. And we see that not only in Cleveland, but I think if you think of the other marquee networks, that's always been a valuable integration of the philanthropy community. Grants is a third piece of the puzzle, and of course, this is a very big part as it relates to either middle mile or last mile activities, depending on the source of the grant activity. That's a very different phase, and again, the sources vary. Construction financing, part of Joel's world, is actually part of what you can be thinking about as well, certainly part of how we kind of kept afloat between grants activity and after philanthropy along the way. Commercial banks, in addition to those that service bonds through like Key, commercial banks play a huge role in supporting basically debt financing in our environment, and should at the appropriate time and place be considered as you are again thinking about how to put the stack of financing in place. Different forms of bond financing. We used Port Authority issuance of about $16 million to basically play a critical role in one moment in time in the life of our organization. And most recently, for those of you who are following our project, with support from investment bankers, actually a significant venture funding model to accelerate the deployment of the network so that we in the nonprofit could both hold on to some fiber, be an equity holder in a spinoff, and also get enough cash to actually pay for our mission, which is to grow the quality of life and the digital economy. So I know it's been a bit of a slightly reframing. I know we all want to see easy answers, but I do want to at least impress upon you that there are at least some combination of those and perhaps others that you want to put into the mix as you think about your journey rather than solving this in 1 4-year political cycle.
Thanks. My name is Nick Han. I'm Senior Managing Director with Macquarie Capital. I've had a 30-year career basically developing and financing infrastructure of all kinds around the world. I'm a relatively recent arrival to the fiber space. I've only been at it for the last 2.5 or 3 years or so, but finding it a space that offers a lot of opportunity. Macquarie is, we're one of the world's largest private sector investors in public infrastructure. We own, you know, roads, bridges, airports, ports, gas utilities, water utilities, electric utilities, and increasingly now telecommunications infrastructure. Building on some of the things some of the other panelists have said, I completely agree with Joanne that revenue bonding is not a possibility. Financing based on subscriber risk is not a possibility in today's marketplace. And it's not a possibility both on the government side and on the private sector side for the same reasons. The first is that designing, building networks on time, on budget, is risky. You know, they're prone to delays, they're prone to cost overruns. Operating and maintaining them to deliver performance is risky. Fixing those costs is risky. There are very few proven models of subscribers on a large scale. And bankers are famously conservative. They want to see that it's been proven somewhere else before they take the risk on lending it to it. And then the final factor is what I'm going to call barriers to entry. If there's an incumbent in a market with existing infrastructure, notwithstanding that that infrastructure might be old, you know, tired copper wire or DSL cable, the profit margins on that old infrastructure are such that effectively there can be a price war if a new entrant to the market tries to come in on a subscriber risk basis. So what does that mean? I think there's a fundamental public policy choice which both arises out of and has effects on financing. And that is the choice between I think, Scott, you referred to it as the slow build model, but I would describe it as a proprietary and cherry-picking model where infrastructure is gradually built on the basis of demand aggregation by a private sector entity that then has a, for want of a better word, monopolistic control of the infrastructure. That's one choice. The other choice is a genuine open access, ubiquitous, and fast build out. Looking at that choice, which I think is by far the better public policy choice, you really only do have two models. One is the public funding model, and the other is the public-private partnership model that obviously Macquarie is a pioneer of. I value the things that Lev is saying about the, you know, piecing together different financing. I think Scott described the creativity in the market. Frankly, I would describe it a little bit more as desperation. Frankly, basic infrastructure, fundamental infrastructure in the United States, the largest economy in the world, should not be reliant on donations and philanthropic gestures. There's got to be a better model, and I think there is now. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. I want to dive deeper into both those models, public funding and the public-private partnership. But first, I thought we'd step back and I wonder if everyone is clear on about why incumbents are not investing. It's easy, you know, to see that there's a bit of a market failure going on. If you're the dominant provider in a market and you have 90% margins, there's not a whole lot of reason for you to invest. But at the same time, you are seeing incumbents doing some investing when there is competition. Is there a chance that incumbents invest when there's not competition?
No.
Is there a chance that that the analyst, the Wall Street analyst, would let them do that? Let's say take a few quarters off of earnings and respond to what's clearly the demand.
Financial markets don't work that way without competition.
Yeah, I completely agree, which is why I'm sometimes mystified by the fact that in Washington we've made policy for a long time on the assumption that making incumbents more profitable would...
Oh, sorry, louder.
I agree with what Nick said, which is why it's mystifying that so much communications policy over the years has been made on the assumption that if we make monopolists more profitable, they will invest more funds. It's economics 101. It doesn't work. But the one thing I would say, as maybe a friendly amendment to what Nick said, is that it's not just competition that leads to new investment by incumbents. We seem to be in a moment where the possibility of competition, the threat of competition, the uncertainty about whether competition is coming is also leading to investment. So an example of that would be that the phone and cable companies are upgrading their networks anywhere that Google Fiber has said it will build or might build, as Blair Levin has pointed out many times. But we're also seeing them start to upgrade their networks in other markets where they may be anticipating. They're not sure whether Google Fiber might build there or not. They're not sure whether there might be a public project or a new initiative started. I would suggest that there is some payoff to even starting to plan and talk and look for partnerships, because that in and of itself will get the incumbents in your market to up their game.
That's really interesting. So we all need to talk more, clearly.
One of the other things that will happen with the incumbents is at some point in time, that old cable plant becomes uncost effective. And so they are going to have to upgrade it, and they will not put in more copper. They will put in fiber. Now, that doesn't happen very darn often, but that is one of the other factors that you will hear all the time from the incumbents is the cost. And it's not CapEx that'll kill you. It's OpEx at the back end of the market.
That's great. Well, Nick, can we dive into your the public-private partnership models that you've seen and have started porting over from the infrastructure world?
Yes, yeah, certainly. The public-private partnership model, and there are a lot of things called public-private partnerships in the fiber space in the U.S. that I guess I would not identify as a public-private partnership, or if it is, it's a partnership that the benefits are skewed much more heavily to the private partner than they should be. But essentially, a public-private partnership, as I refer to it, is a long-term concession where the private partner takes responsibility for delivery, for, you know, on time, on budget, takes responsibility for network performance, only receives a return on its investment if it performs, but that the asset itself and goes and finances the asset based on its balance sheet, the private sector, and the revenues of the project, not on not a municipal financing, but the asset itself remains in public sector ownership, and therefore it's not creation of a private sector monopoly. That's a public-private partnership as I see it. What that does is it allows the risk of delivery to be transferred to where I think it properly belongs, the private sector partner, who are generally much more efficient than governments at actually delivering large projects on time and on budget. It makes sure that the costs of operating and maintaining the network and refreshing the network are properly factored in right from the outset. Far too many governments, you know, are forced, it's not because they're stupid, but they're forced to scratch together just enough money to build the network in the first place. They kind of hope that there'll be money when they need to operate and maintain the network or refresh the network, and sometimes that hope is not properly founded. So, you know, networks start off fine and then deteriorate because they're not operated, maintained, and refreshed.
In the spirit of good open conversation about the PPP, I want to suggest to you that it's largely an unproven play in our marketplace, and in fact, I think it's largely unproven anywhere in the world in the fiber space. That is to say, when it is underwritten by the public purse, there's a way to pull this off, and obviously Kentucky is a middle mile story underwritten by the public purse. But the model which obligates last mile is unproven because we have yet to find, I think, sustainable and scalable models where individual households are going to in some way, shape, or form be obligated with or without choice for core service and or premium service. And so that's a cultural issue. I don't think that there's something fundamentally wrong with the model. I just want to make sure that while we think there might be one model, quote unquote, which is to raise bonds one way, shape, form, or the other, or a model in which someone underwrites, we have to realize essentially what it is that's being obligated in this activity set. And again, I think the journey is much more nuanced than simply saying there is a way to finance it. Oh, that's a true statement. But we have not culturally in our country, or most anywhere in the world, actually gone down this road together to figure out how to obligate people for what is a very reasonable but hut tax, a requirement that everyone pay in order to actually make the money, the financing work.
And Lev does, you know, refer to the catch. I guess there's always a catch in everything. The catch in the public-private partnership model is that because the financial markets will not finance subscriber risk, the catch is that there has to be a public source of funding, whether that's, you know, we think it's very economically rational, if not always politically acceptable, to levy a utility fee in return for the service provided. But that could come from, you know, other forms of taxation. It could come from sales taxation. It could come from, you know, many different forms of taxation. That's the kind of catch in the model. But it's a catch in virtually all infrastructure. Roads are paid for that way, electric utilities are paid for that way, sewers are paid for that way, garbage collection is paid for that way, should be no different. And, you know, you're right that the public-private partnership model in the last mile in fiber is unproven in the U.S., but it's proven in a lot of other industry sectors, and fiber isn't that different.
While we're beating up on my friend Nick, I'm going to jump in, and if I'm going too far afield from financing, Scott, stop me. You all heard at lunch about this extraordinary achievement here in Kentucky. It's really an incredible model. It's an extraordinary partnership. It took incredible political will, and I can't say enough good things about what was accomplished and how strong that team was, and why it's such a good thing, and Kentucky's a model for many other states. At the same time, I think it is really important to note, if you're engaging in any kind of public broadband initiative, public-private partnership, seeking private investment, it is very hard to have everything. There are trade-offs. And I say publicly in my presentations all the time that if you want control and full decision-making and control over the infrastructure and what will happen with it and what the pricing will be and what the service levels will be and who will be served and whether service will be ubiquitous to everyone, et cetera, if you want that, there's going to have to be some pretty considerable risk. That risk and control come together. And I think this is where we disagree, and this is where I'm beating up on you, but I think I'm...
It's all done with love.
Yeah, and I think he beat up on me in the same way a little bit earlier. It There is no model out there, my friends, anywhere where you have zero risk and get 100% of what your community wants. Just not going to happen. So these are trade-offs, and as you look, coming back to our topic, at financing options and at funding options, to Lev's point about the other places where there may be contributors and ways to build your model, just remember, partners mean giving up control, giving up decision-making, taking risk means getting it. There are lots of other considerations as well, but those are the two that are at the heart of it. And I would say the big goal is, what's the balance of those two? And in balancing those, can you still make sure your community gets 100% of the benefit, that you're not trading off benefit based on these things?
So my two cents there, not to beat up on anybody, but you take a municipality, and I believe there has to be a model or a chance or a way to do this, and I'm searching for that model. But there's financing that's out there, and again, remember, I'm on the cost side, I'm on the build side. So I know these municipalities are spending money, as Kentucky's doing. I know these municipalities are spending money for services. I know there's anchor tenants within there. I know that if we can aggregate those and find out what that cost model is, there's a monthly cost that these folks are paying right now. I know that I can bring that with a good faith municipality and bring it to the municipal financing market or several other markets that are out there. You all know them, we all know them, and say, okay, this model is spending $100,000 per month. I know from my side, from a cost model, if I can show them that I can permit, design, build, maintain that marketplace, put electronics in with it, and instead of them doing 100 megabits, I can put in a gigabit. I can put in 10, you know, tell me what your electronics are that you want us to deliver to that facility. And I can put that in. And if I can package that together, and then I can put a few extra fibers in that same market, and when I'm designing that, go to the marketplace that are users that we've done virtually $200 million worth of value use for around the country, and say, help me in this city. Is there a tower someplace you want to get to, a Verizon tower? Those are big right now, as you folks know. Are there business parks that you'd like me to go by instead of going straight from that school to that school? Go off here, drop a handhole right there. So I can start going to the AT&T's, Verizon, Zales, you know, Mox, Pegs of the world and say, you know, I can build this any way you want me to build it. And then I go back to the city and say, guess what, guys? Here's $100,000. I can finance this thing. You pay me $100,000 for 7 years. And think of this like a car loan. You know, when you go in and sign a car loan, and say, here's my monthly payments, $100,000 a year. You're going to pay me $100,000 a year. At the end of the time, I'm going to hand you that title. You're going to still own it during that 7 years. You're still going to control me as I market that, and I can show you how to do IRUs. But I'll hand you those keys, and instead of paying me $100,000, if you still want me to maintain that network, now I'm going to maintain it for $20,000. I'll locate it. I'll provide, you know, 24/7 service. I'll do all those types of things. So I think there, you know, and that dearly to me is one of those models I really want to try and really want to try to figure out to do.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about municipal bonds. If you're not willing to take risk in your project, neither will investors. It's that simple. We're dealing with investors who have suffered from some real whiplash in modern history related to the risk that they've taken in projects like these. If we all didn't think that fiber was a necessary infrastructure, none of us would be here. Unfortunately, investors don't feel the same way. They're not convinced. And so as you put your plan of finance together, when you work with your finance team and when you work with the professionals that you've hired on the technology side, there needs to be a common goal, and that is, how do we assume just enough risk to convince investors that we have skin in the game, that we are willing to take risk ourselves as a community, and that that risk is something that we feel is underwritable from a public standpoint. And so when we put together a financing, it looks at many of those things. And I'll use UIA as an example, and I'll build on something that Joanne spoke to a few minutes ago, and that was the bond concept. related to the fact that you can issue revenue bonds that are secured by the project revenues that are thrown off, but investors will not buy those on their own face. In UIA's example, they pledged franchise fees, which are basically energy taxes. Over the last 4 or 5 years, we've issued bonds in 2011 and 2013, and they're looking and considering issuing an additional bond issue here in the short future. And what's interesting about that is even though they've pledged those franchise fees, they have not touched them once because the system revenues have been sufficient to pay debt service and operating costs on those projects related to UIA. Not Utopia, that's a little bit different. So when you look at what you're willing to risk, the risk that the six communities in UIA have put up is a risk of their franchise fees. Those fees would come out of those six communities if they had to be hit. But when in fact, when you look at how things have been functioning at UIA in terms of their take rates and their builds, they've been very deliberate in how they've built things out. They haven't had to touch their franchise fees once. So again, they have some skin in the game. Investors will take on an investment position with those types of bonds because they realize that there is some hook that they have that is not necessarily related to system revenues.
That's interesting. We thought public financing for this was dead, but there may be a way to do it.
Again, it depends upon what each community is willing to put up in terms of a backstop for the bonds. If there's some type of revenue stream that would supplement the primary source of revenues, which would be the system revenues.
The fiber asset itself.
It has to be something other than the network revenues.
I'm sure Tom would agree, but you know, one thing financial markets are good at is they evolve very quickly when they, you know, get new information and see success. And I'm personally convinced that if we can only get, you know, one or two large scale projects up and running to prove the subscriber revenues within a very, very short period of time, we will be able to finance subscriber risk deals. You know, whether it's financed through public sector revenue bonds or through the private sector, what's lacking at the moment is a couple of, you know, large scale successful projects that prove up the model.
And Nick's 100% right. I think the market needs to mature. I think investors need to embrace this as a necessary infrastructure as part of any municipal long-term plan, and they're just not there yet. And as projects become complete, as financings do get completed, there'll be some acceptance and there'll be some evolution within the market. But they're not there yet. Investors are just not there yet.
So aren't there any, there must be some forward-looking investors who are willing to accept greater risk for greater reward. Presumably those would be the ones that start to creep out and make a few bets. Are we seeing any of that?
So I think, Scott, part of the problem is that, you know, this is basic infrastructure that should be cheap. It should be financed at, you know, the cost of financing for Kentucky Wired was, you know, taking the debt and the equity into account was less than 5%. The problem is that the private sector investment market, who you describe as being forward-looking, they're looking for 20% plus hurdle rates on investment, which is what the incumbents are looking for. That's why so little investment is happening. You know, this is basic infrastructure. This should not be being financed at 20% hurdle rates.
I do think, again, that there are actually middle ground between those percentages. Again, lived experience. That, again, depends on where you are in the maturity. I mean, I don't know how many maturity cycle of actually building networks. I don't know how many of you actually think that you're starting tabula rasa, or how many think that you're just extending current infrastructure. But there's a different kind of approach, it seems to me, to the marketplace based on where you are at and different kinds of financing. So there indeed is a very healthy, an extremely healthy, and competitive marketplace for venture-based investment, which need not be a zero-sum game. I either take it all, or I have to own it all, venture or public. There are obviously hybrid models that are out there to be built and to be developed, and in the end, you can, and I encourage you to think about owning the portfolio, where some part of your network design takes full advantage of the risk that apparently, at least thus far, you know, is hard to find in more traditional markets, and that you undergird your portfolio with more patient money that is based either on bonding or private-public partnerships that can take the 20-year view. But this is not easy work, folks. The financing, I know it's the topic of this afternoon's panel, sounds like it's complicated, and it is not trivial. But building, operating, and growing the network is infinitely more difficult. And so, again, I mean, I come from a kind of come from an academic engineering background. Gold plating your design specification, it can and will lead to paralysis, which is why I've said all along in my own community, let's create facts on the ground and continue to make course correct. Write the business plan with a really good eraser on the back of the pencil and keep on moving in the public interest in the case of my own efforts.
And I know Deb is looking at questions, but just real quickly, from an investor standpoint in traditional municipal bonds, we have the easiest time selling bonds to investors when they view a service or an enterprise as an essential service. Water, electric revenues, those types of transactions, those types of enterprises are viewed as essential services. And until the market accepts that fiber broadband is an essential service, we will continue to have struggles marketing these bonds without some form of backstop in the investment banking world.
We've got just 5 minutes left. I'd love to explore maybe a third option. So we've talked about public financing, we've talked about public-private partnerships, but isn't there an emerging third option with companies like Ting, who we've heard from, which is not a private company, a publicly traded company that has decided to try to invade the markets of these slow-moving incumbents? So like Google Fiber, but on a smaller scale, are we going to see a proliferation of these kinds of companies that are risking their own capital?
No, because the financial markets fundamentally won't support them at scale. So, you know, I forget how many uncounted billions of dollars Google has sitting in its bank account, but even Google is taking a slow and cautious demand aggregation approach. I don't think anybody who's smaller than Google is going to be any less cautious.
I certainly see small companies moving into the space or escalating what they're doing in this space. And ITV3, who spoke briefly during the last panel, and other companies who've been around this week, Ting is a very good example, Metronet in Indiana, which also is very interested in Kentucky, and other regional players like that are backed by money at a level that I have never seen before since right after the 96 Act when we had an effort around cable competition. Now, that's still very preliminary. I think this comes in the wake of Google. I think it's based on business plans that assume that Google is onto something. But as Nick said, Google's a sort of singular entity, and there are probably ways that it monetizes the investment that we can't guess at because we don't know about it and that nobody else really can replicate because nobody else has their business. But I would say that I am certainly seeing small companies investing. But to the point of scale, that does not solve our national broadband deficit. It's one nice step in the right direction, and that step could stop, that we could see them back off if things get tougher.
For folks in the audience here, I mean, my sense is we can't wait for all of this to get sorted out. We're not waiting for, you know, the bond market to finally realize the value. You're here for a purpose. You want to make a difference in your community today. And so between the interstices of the sort of mega strategies, which we all want to support in the right way, you have to be pragmatic. We have to be pragmatic. And working with the smaller players may not be the ultimate national policy. We don't have a national strategy. We are a mosaic of different, you know, fabrics stitched together. And you deserve to bring your piece of the quilt to this activity. So again, my encouragement is to, whether it is with a Ting or a Metronet or with your local commercial or with your local community, start moving and keep an eye on the horizon, which may well be these opportunities.
But with apologies to Lev, you know, when the U.S. built its infrastructure, its initial infrastructure, you know, 150, 200 years ago, your utilities, your transportation companies were private sector. They were given monopolies. You created huge trusts, and it got it done. But then you had to bust those trusts in the 1920s. Fiber is no different. If we do it badly initially, it'll be a mess to fix up.
That's great. Well, I want to thank all the panelists. This is a tremendous discussion. Lev, you're such a cheerleader for cities who are trying to figure this out. We really appreciate all your comments.
You just need to hire him to come to your city.